This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
Welcome to the Migration Podcast, your guide for waterfowl hunting tactics, gear, and conservation. And now, your host, Ryan Halbly.
What is up, everyone? As Johnny M. said, I'm your host, Brian Halbly. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to tune in to the Migration Waterfowl Podcast. Coming to you from the headwaters of the Ohio River, at the Migration Waterfowl Headquarters in Western Pennsylvania. Presented by Bluebird Waterfowl. Check out their new wings, that's W-I-N-G-Z, floating replacement wings for your spinning wing decoys. You can choose from 4 different replacement wing sets, an 8-inch round slow motion wings set, a 6-inch round high visibility wing set, a 9-inch standard low-light wing shape set, and an 11.5-inch standard low-light wing shape set. You can check them out at bluebirdwaterfowl.com or give them a call at 800-564-0914. This episode is also brought to you by these other fine partners, the Duck Hole and Company. I was out doing some scouting this past weekend, and marked a bunch of spots that I want to get some golden millet planted. If you need some golden millet, you can get a hold of John over at the Duck Hole and Company, and he can get you fixed up with that. Did a whole episode with Gaines Slade, the owner of golden millet last episode. If you want to learn more about that, if you haven't heard about it, we're going to get some more of that planted this year. Also working with Rig'em Right Outdoors. You guys know Rig'em Right. They've been around for a long time. You can find their products in most big box and smaller outdoor stores around the country. You could also visit them at rig'emright.com. If you're in need of any type of blinds or decoys or dog accessories, of course, the old tried and true rigs, weighted rigs for your decoys that they're famous for. Just about everything you need for waterfowl hunting, Rig'em Right has it. Also brought to you by Flight Day Ammunition. Ben and I recorded a podcast that's going to be releasing soon. You get to hear his backstory, how he got into duck hunting, how he got into building ammunition. And I've just been super impressed with his rounds. He's been innovating with some testing on some new steel loads that are out now. You can check them out at flightdayammo.com. Use code MW10 at checkout. Get you 10% off and get you set up for the upcoming season. Also brought to you by AVES Hunting Gear. That's AVES Hunting Gear. I've been working with them for the last couple of months. I got a good bit of their product sent to me for testing. I've been wearing their lightweight feather light series, the Dot Air shirts and the Scout pants while I've been fishing and scouting and working on my property. And I got to tell you, I'm super impressed with that. I can't wait to get some testing on the heavier weight items this upcoming duck season. You can go over and check them out at aveshunting.com. That's aveshunting.com. And also brought to you by Northern Duck Calls. You can check out their line of cut-down calls over at northernduckcalls.com. I've been practicing working with that cut-down call. Looking forward to putting that to service this season as well. And I'll also be telling you more about these partners later in the show. For the first time since I was about 17, I can now grow a beard at work. I know it sounds crazy, but between the Air Force and my time as a law enforcement officer for the last 30 years, I was unable to keep my beard outside of my lengthy vacation breaks in my later years of employment, as I was able to take a couple of weeks off at a time here and there. It's kind of a funny thing. You stop and think about it, how much you give up whenever you join the military or join a paramilitary organization like law enforcement and policing, just the rules and regulations and you know, looking back on it, it all makes sense for discipline and uniformity and things like that. But times have changed, and a lot of people don't want to do careers in law enforcement anymore. It's becoming very difficult to recruit people. There's a nationwide shortage of recruits, and you can't blame people. I mean, I always say I try not to dive too deep into the political arena on this platform, but, you know, let's face it, society and a lot of the media outlets have not been kind to law enforcement officers in recent history. And now we have elected officials calling for attacks on ICE agents, which is just insane to me. But regardless of your political beliefs, I mean, you have to have law and order for anything to work. You want safety for your kids. You want order in your neighborhoods and the places you spend time. It's crazy to me, but I digress. The whole beard thing, you know, they're starting to loosen up regulations to try to attract more recruits. We had a lot of strict policies about tattoos that can be seen on your forearms and, you know, facial hair. And I guess this is a way nationwide they're finding that can help attract a few more people, you know, that want to have beards or have tattoos on their arms. It sounds silly, I guess, but, you know, that's going along with some other regulations that they're easing up on too. Like some departments require college degrees, which is never a bad thing. I mean, I think it's a great thing to have a more education, and a lot of people that attend universities or colleges around the country that kind of gets them out of their smaller circles, and they have more interaction with different walks of life that a lot of people normally wouldn't be exposed to until they get out into the real world. So I don't know. We'll see what's going to happen with that. I hope there's a pendulum that's going to swing in this country. It seems like military recruiting has picked up. I don't know how that would transfer to the law enforcement side of it, but I guess we'll have to see. But for now, I get the benefit from wearing a beard. Of course, I can't look like one of the Robertsons. It's still going to have to be, you know, subject to being clean cut and kept up and things like that. But I'm pretty excited about it. You know, I'm still going to wear a face mask. I think it's important to cover up as much as your skin that you can, anything that's unnatural out there, especially this white boy with light skin in the wintertime without a tan. But yeah, just excited to, you know, have that opportunity, have that option during the hunting season, not having to take the first week of my duck hunting trip trying to get some facial hair going after shaving every day. I don't know how excited my wife is about it, though, to be honest with you. She likes clean shaven face. Kind of gives me a hard time when I'm on vacation, joking around, of course. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how long that I can go without getting annoyed by it myself, and see how long she can go. So the governor of Pennsylvania signed the bill to allow hunting on Sundays in Pennsylvania. I never thought I would see this day, to be honest with you. I mean, we started having these, I don't know what you would call it. We started organizing different sporting groups across Pennsylvania, you know, over 25 years ago, maybe even longer. And it's just one of those things that we kind of just thought would never happen. And to have that restriction lifted, it's going to open up a lot of doors for a lot of people. Hopefully it'll help save the declining numbers. I don't know if that's going to be the cure-all, but a lot of people, a lot of families, a lot of kids are going to have more opportunity, which is always a great thing. Pennsylvania halted their July Board of Commissioner meeting because they were anticipating the governor signing this. I mentioned that on the last podcast. To this, up until I recorded this today, they still have not set a date for that next meeting. So it's kind of up in the air if we're going to have the same seasons that were set earlier or if they're going to make changes. But like I said before, as soon as I hear something, I'll definitely update everybody on that. As I mentioned earlier, I did a bunch of scouting on Sunday with my friend Mike Pomaibo. We didn't have a whole lot of time, but we did go out and scout two river systems close to home. And the one river system, it's been a few years since I hunted it. And the last time I hunted it, as I was leaving, I had an encounter with a gentleman that worked on the property that was kind of adjacent to the access to this river system. And he told me that I wasn't allowed to access it through there. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird because, you know, it's a, you know, navigable river, obviously a big one. And, you know, up to that high water mark, you can have access. And I wasn't cutting through the property that he was claiming to work for. And I don't know if he just wanted to keep people out or what the story was. But so I hadn't been back there since that encounter, and just was busy and hunted other spots and things. So I wanted to go back and check that out because I had made some notes on that. And lo and behold, there was kind of a makeshift parking area that wasn't there before. And there was a bunch of fishermen getting out of their vehicles and walking down this path to go down to the river. Now, they weren't, I thought some of them were going to go to the area that I wanted to go check out, but turned out they were going to a whole nother spot. But anyway, that answered my question about access. There was a clear trail down there from a public road to the high water mark of the river. And there was no signs anywhere. Nobody came out and yelled at anybody. So I'm going to chalk that up as everything's good to go for that. It's a better late season spot from my experience in the past. So once everything freezes up, that river system takes a lot longer to freeze, obviously. So I was pretty happy to find that out. Then we went up and checked out another river system. Again, an access that I had marked. This is a spot I've hunted further north on this river system, but I've never hunted this far south on it. And through my e-scouting, I found a kind of a really difficult place. I mean, nobody can get to it from land. You have to go to a public access, either downstream or upstream, and float it to get there. And I think that's going to discourage a lot of people from checking that out. But got to check that out. There was a bunch of smart weed growing. The access was really nice. I would imagine that the access point that we found probably gets a good bit of pressure. But like I said, you can get upstream or downstream pretty quickly, pretty easily from there and get away from people if need be. But so that was the two goals that I had for scouting this weekend. Mike and I came back to our local club and did some trap shooting. I shot really good. He shot excellent. I ended up shooting a 23 out of 25 on the first round, and he shot a 24. And that was with our duck guns. Last week we went up and I took my dad's Browning over under, and I didn't shoot quite as well, probably because I hadn't shot that shotgun in a while. And, you know, I've had that Beretta A400. I've been duck hunting with that thing for, you know, 15 plus years. So it's kind of like an extension of my arm. But it was nice to go out there and break a bunch of birds and only miss a few on the whole round. So that's kind of fun to do. We also patterned Mike's shotgun. He was wanting to buy some flight day ammo. So I said, hey, I've got some boxes of different rounds that Ben had sent me if you want to see what these do out of your gun. And he was pretty appreciative of that because he was kind of asking me a bunch of questions like, what should I order? I don't want to buy a box of something and it not pattern well. So we got him fixed up with that, and he's super impressed. I mean, I don't want to list all the manufacturers that rounds that he had that he was patterning and seeing what shot the best, but the Flight Day Ammo blew it out of the water. So I can't wait for you guys to hear the episode I recorded with Ben Myers. That's going to be coming up. I think I'm going to launch that next week if I got my timeline right. So be on the lookout for that. On this episode of the Migration Waterfowl Podcast, I'll be talking with Max Zaruba from Wisconsin. Max is a passionate duck hunter and a veteran. We discuss his journey into the world of duck hunting, the techniques he employs, and the importance of community support through his platform, Hard Water Freaks. Max shares insights on duck migration patterns, the importance of scouting, and the challenges of hunting in Wisconsin. He discusses his passion for hunting the Mississippi River and the challenges that come with it. He talks about the importance of a well-concealed blind and how much time and effort he puts into his hides. He also breaks down his approach to reading the weather during the season, specifically how winds affect and sometimes stop migrating ducks. He emphasizes the significance of giving back to youth and veterans through fishing trips and community events, highlighting the need for engagement in the sport to ensure its future. He also touches on memorable hunting experiences and the camaraderie that comes with the sport. Thank you to God for blessing us with another opportunity to get together for another episode. So let's get into episode number 64. Welcome back to another episode of the Migration Waterfowl Podcast. I appreciate you all coming back and joining me today. I got a special guest from Wisconsin, Mr. Max Zaruba. If you wouldn't mind, take a second and introduce yourself. Let the audience know anything you want them to hear about you.
All right. I mean, tons of people in Wisconsin and you'd say the Midwest know me as an ice fisherman. I have a decently large platform called Hard Water Freaks. That's where I'm, social media famous, even though I'll never take claim to that name because it's, I don't know, that's just kind of weird. But that's just where everybody kind of knows me from. I do a lot of stuff for veterans and kids events where we raise money at my events for veterans and kids. We spend that money on getting veterans or kids out on fishing trips, slowly adding hunting trips into the mix. It's been a lot of fun over the last couple of years. Spend a lot of money on doing the right things. So that's like pretty much what my platform when it comes to sales is geared towards, is building a community that helps the right people get on the right kinds of trips. And thank God I have a huge group of people who support every single thing I do, whether it be attending our events, purchasing off the website, purchasing things through PayPal that you can't sell on websites because you get in trouble. Yeah. But it's been quite the adventure, but I'm also a huge duck hunter. And in the last, 8 years, duck hunting has consumed me to the point of I do not deer hunt anymore because duck hunting is my life. I do not fish during duck season. I travel all over the state for duck season. We go to the Mississippi River for 5-6 weeks in a row, 4 days a week. I pretty much devote my whole life to duck hunting during duck season. So it's been a lot of fun. That's me.
Okay. How did you get started in duck hunting?
Ironically, I'll be truthful. So when I first started duck hunting, I went with the wrong people. We'll just let people's minds venture with that. But I went with what all the viral videos are about. We'll just say Karens who think they own the marsh. That's where I started duck hunting. It was bad. Like, I was in a boat as a new duck hunter, and we set up before somebody else. Well, they came in. That turned into us going after them, not me, because I had no clue what was going on. Chasing them down, finding them, screaming at them that this is our marsh, kind of thing. And I'm just sitting there like, what in the is happening right now? Because I had no clue what to expect. Soon after, I went on like 3 hunts with like that person, and I knew this is not who I should be duck hunting with. Yeah. Slowly but surely, I got a kayak, and I started, I had tagged along with other people to the Mississippi River. I learned about that, which is very intimidating to most people. And it was at the point then, but now I'm pretty confident like that I bring my friends with me, or friends and I link up and go together. But I got a kayak. I started going out all by myself. So new to like regulations and stuff that I would bring the book and like read before I did certain things, because I had no clue. So I started going, taught myself how to duck call, watched a couple YouTube videos. This is before TikTok and all that fun stuff, but yeah, watched some videos doing that. And over the years, became pretty proficient at it. And then slowly bought a John boat, a 12 footer. Then I bought a 13-footer with a 13-horse, and now I got a 1650 with a 40-horse. So it slowly has progressed. But I started in the industry going with the wrong people, and to this day, they know who they are. I'm sure they're going to see this. It's the wrong people, 100%. I'll stick with that.
Well, we always talk about finding mentors to teach you is a great way to learn. So I guess it could be said the other way. If they're bad mentors, you can learn from that too.
Oh, for sure. And last year I started taking kids out. That was a lot of fun. The kid that I took out last year, I scouted a spot. He could have shot his limit in about 4 minutes. And he was just looking at me with wide eyes like, what is even happening right now? I was like, a lot of scouting is what's happening. So to see his smile, we went out the next day to a pond on private and we shot some more ducks there. It's been cool, like mentoring. A lot of my friends who duck hunt now duck hunt because I got them to go duck hunting, and their wives don't like that, but, you know, teach their own.
Yeah. So if you've been duck hunting before TikTok, you've got quite a few years in. How many years have you been duck hunting?
Honestly, to date, from the first duck hunt, I would say 20 years. But from where it became like a diehard obsession, I would say diehard, I would say 2014 is when I was like, deer hunting kind of sucks. And then in like 2018, that's when it really started to go downhill, where I just started hunting the rut. And then one year I went out to the deer stand and I climbed up there and I texted my old lady and I was like, this is my last sit. And she's like, why? And I was like, this isn't it. Like, I do not want to be here. And nobody in my family has that stuff on the walls. It's all giant bucks. My family owns land all over the state. Down here, northern Wisconsin, like, I have all this land that I can hunt. I still have a ton of farms around here that I'm legally allowed to hunt because I'm still friends with the farmers, but I just don't care about deer hunting. So duck hunting literally has consumed everything about my life for probably 3 months a year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a similar story with a lot of hardcore waterfowlers from deer country. I've got the same kind of background here in Pennsylvania where everybody's a deer hunter first, but yeah, same with you, man. I got bit by the bug and, you know, it's hard to sit in those boring deer stands for long periods of time when you could be hanging out in the blinds with your buddies and having a good time.
Yeah, I was proficient at deer hunting. Never shot a giant. I shot one giant, tracked him for 4 miles, never found him. But I never shot a giant. My family is all giant deer on the wall. Every single person above me, when it comes to being a male, has a giant deer. Even my aunt has giant deer on the wall. And I was into hunting in the sense of going out for the adventure, but I would have no problem shooting a doe. It was about getting meat. I passed on, because of my family, passed on just a stupid amount of deer that, like, now I'm like, I would have smoked that deer in a heartbeat. Because now it's like, if I'm going to go, it's for the meat. It has nothing to do with the antlers anymore, or like, you know, the proper big doe or anything. I still won't shoot a fawn or a nubby buck, but I'm gonna slug hunt this year during the week, probably 2 or 3 times. And I 100%, I don't care if it's an 11 pointer that looks like this, you're going down.
Yeah. That's great. What's your favorite species of waterfowl to hunt?
Oof. Everybody has that, like, green. They love the green. It's mixed bags for me. So, I mean, species-wise, I would just have to say mixed bag. I do not want 4 Drake Mallards. I do not want 4 Gadwall Drakes. Like, I want, like, one of each. Like, my big ones would be, like, besides teal, because we get a very good teal season in Wisconsin. I would want Drake Mallard, Gadwall, Drake Widgeon, Drake Pintail. Like, that's like my species. Like, I would rather have a mixed bag than just one of one kind of duck. But overall, I don't know why, but I mean, I do love a Drake Gadwall. Like, just the way they come in and they play that F game.
Yeah.
Circle and circle and look and cup and leave and cup. You're just sitting there and you're just like, oh my God, I can't call anymore. And if I stop calling, they stop coming. And then no matter what you do, they're like, I'm just going to land 400 yards away.
Yeah.
So, for like, sure. The Drake Gadwall or like a Drake Widgeon would be like the top ones for me.
Okay. That's a great answer. I like that. You know, being in the Atlantic Flyway, we can shoot six ducks, and I'm kind of with you on that. I'm not mad at a nice mixed bag of, you know, four or five different drakes.
Yeah. It's if a drake and a hen land, I'm always going to take the drake. But when I hunt, I got buddies who will not touch anything but drakes. I have no problem shooting a hen. If I have a choice between the two, it's obviously going to be a drake. I like the colors. I like the look of them. But when it comes down to it, I have no problem shooting a hen. But I'm not just like going to go out of my way and be a hen killer. But it's funny little story about like that real quick is I was out with my buddy Jim. A whole group of birds landed at like 40 yards. And they landed and it was like tornado winds. And we had a hen mallard super close, but like all the other ducks were like further away. And he's like, I'm going to take that drake widgeon. So he water swats a drake widgeon. I water swat this hen and we missed the other ducks. And I go out to grab the hen and she's kicking like this with a band. And I look at Jim and he's like, you gotta be kidding me. And I was like, should have shot the hen, Jim. But, I'm not picky when it comes to ducks. I mean, we've been going to the Mississippi River now for a long time, and it's been a lot of teal lately. And I mean, like Florida's reporting like a horrible number of teal. Here in Wisconsin on the Mississippi River, we could shoot our teal limit in the first 30 minutes of almost every hunt on the Mississippi River and be done. But it gets to the point where you're like, all right, we each have three teal down. Let's hold out for the big ducks to show up.
Right, right.
But it's just, it's crazy here. But like teal hunting, I love teal. Teal's right up there with the best of them for me. I don't know. I don't know if it's like the skill set to hit that stupid little bird going 1,000 miles an hour or what it is.
Yeah, it's not easy for sure. This episode is brought to you by Bluebird Waterfowl, creator of the Animator. The Animator is revolutionizing the waterfowl community with the world's first spinning wing decoy conversion kit. Turn your existing spinner into a water motion decoy in seconds and learn how to finish more birds with the sound of water. Guaranteed to boost your hunt or your money back. Flaring birds with your spinner is a thing of the past. Try one risk-free at bluebirdwaterfowl.com or at your favorite local outdoor supplier. Do you spend most of your time waterfowl hunting in Wisconsin or you do any traveling?
I would love to travel. Here's the problem that hurts me. My big moneymaker is ice fishing. I have a lot of contracts every single year that I have to fulfill photography-wise. I do a ton of photography for companies.
Okay.
And you got to take the good ice when you got it. Now, I would travel in a heartbeat. If we get a year where there's, the ice like holds off like 6 weeks, 4 weeks, I would travel in a heartbeat. I'd go down to Missouri. I'd go to, you know, Southern Illinois, something, Iowa, Southern Iowa, Kansas, Arkansas. I would in a heartbeat. But the problem is that when Wisconsin, Northern Wisconsin ice usually forms mid-November. So, like me duck hunting past mid-November, I duck hunt until the first weekend in December every year, but it's hurting on me because I want to get like to like, you know, the moneymaker, like my season, my following, my website, everything is about ice fishing. So it's, sure. It's tough to like want to travel because you will lose money by doing so. Man, I see some of those timber hunts and I've had some timber hunts here on the Mississippi River. They're crazy. It's pretty cool, but nothing beats like a wide open marsh or swamp hunt to me, like cattails and stuff like that. So like I get like a good mix on the Mississippi River. So like I'm not like gung ho to go south when I could get like a lot of it here.
Sure. What about you? Walk us. I'm sorry, go ahead.
What about you?
I do quite a bit of traveling. Pennsylvania is decent. You got to work hard. But I should say, you got to work hard just about anywhere. You got to scout, you got to put your time in, but the Atlantic Flyway is certainly not what it used to be. So, I'm lucky enough. I've been at the same, employer for 29 years and I got a lot of vacation time and, my weekly work schedule is pretty sweet. So I get to travel quite a bit, and I try to get out west to catch the early teal seasons because we don't have a teal season here in Pennsylvania. Ohio's the closest place to go for that. And then I'll make a couple other trips for big ducks, you know, November, December. So, but yeah, the bulk of my hunting is done around home here.
Gotcha.
So walk us through a typical duck hunt in Wisconsin. Are you spending most of your time on the river, or are you getting back into the backwaters? I know you mentioned getting into some cattail backwaters and things. What's that look like?
So in southeastern Wisconsin, southern Wisconsin for that matter, in central Wisconsin, early in the season for like the first 6 weeks, I would say 3 to 4 weeks, sometimes 6 weeks. It just depends on weather. But teal season, we get the 2 weeks in early September, and then we get like a 2 week break. But like, you know, for teal season and like early southern opener, we call it here, because our state is split in two. There's northern and south. They're a week apart. So we'll drive all the way up north, hunt up there for northern opener. And that we usually just go to random places, except the fact that we're going to shoot our wood ducks and then a couple mallards or teal. Like, you know, getting a limit, you're like, yeah, but really it's just to get up north and have a good time. But when it comes to traditional marshes and stuff like that, like down here, it's a shit show, because all the good marshes are close to the two biggest cities in the entire state. So it is an absolute, it's a crapshoot. We get there the night before, like 8 p.m., sit in our spots, and we camp out, hold them down. You know, we spread out in our little spot. We always sit in a spot that someone can't, they just can't sit on top of you. So this way, like, we don't have to deal with what you see on TikTok and Instagram, where people are just screaming at each other and throwing their guns in the water. And we don't have to deal with that, because we don't put ourselves into that. But, like, for the Mississippi River, get to the launch at, like, 4 o'clock in the morning. You got to beat the locals. You got to beat the locals, because the locals have spots that they will sit like no matter what. So you just got to beat them if you feel as though they're going to put pressure on you.
Yeah.
But I mean, we throw mega spreads, always throwing giant spreads, lots, you know, like 4 to 6 spinners, tons of shoreline motion with like all sorts of vibrators and splashers and stuff. Like, it is super realistic. We do a lot of time, but you know, building blinds, we spend a ton of time building blinds. We'll spend 2 hours in the morning just literally cutting dead vegetation, building it into like a little house with like, you know, overhead cover, mm-hmm. piling the grass on. 99% of our hunting is not out of boats. It's, we take the boat, we call it the mothership, take the boat to where you're going to hunt, and then we go hide the boat. Usually in like a hole or like a creek or something around the corner. But when it comes to like main river hunting, we don't do that. Like my vessels over the years have been on the main channel maybe 3 times because the backwaters are just miles and miles deep. So you can drive like over a mile just through backwaters, weaving and weaving and weaving. That's by the crow flies, just to get to some of just get to the river channel from some of the spots. It's a 3 mile drive, because you're just doing this the whole way through, working towards the main channel. But the birds, you know, from the top, they're using the main channel for guidance, but they're not landing in the main channel. So
right.
We do a lot of like, a lot of our spots are 4 or 6 inches deep. Like, you run in on plane and then you come off and then you're just, you know, in mud, you just kind of set up like that. It's kind of crazy. But, I tell people all the time, like 99% of what I hunt, you could take a canoe to, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Here in Pennsylvania, at least in western Pennsylvania, the Allegheny River and the Monongahela River meet to form the Ohio. That's the headwaters of the Ohio. And everything's been so channelized. And with the terrain, we've got some rolling hills, which is the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains, and there's really not that much backwater. It's unfortunate, because I think back in the day, before they dammed everything up and channelized it and put locks in, I think there was a lot more of that. But now it's the few. I do have a couple of honey holes that are tough to get to that a lot of people overlook, but we don't have them in numbers or in depth like you're talking about, going back miles into them. That sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, we got spots here on the Mississippi River. You could run 5-6 miles. to the point where you get to where you're going and you're on the way back, you're like, thank God we have two boats, because this one might not make it back. I might not have enough gas to get back. But we figure it out. If we're ever going to do anything where it's like, if we're going to go downriver from a launch, we always have two boats. We will never go downriver with one boat, because that nightmare could become a reality really quick.
Sure.
I would say 99% we're launching in the backwaters. Like, we only have one spot where you actually launch into a moving channel. The rest is backwater, and you'll see guys with canoes and kayaks, you know, reasonably okay amount that they'll paddle in, and you can do it. But the problem is you got guys like me and the guy that I hunt with a lot, Chase. We throw giant spreads, and whenever we do, it's pretty rare because we hunt in places where there's not a lot of pressure. We'll go out of launches that most guys won't go out of. And we always throw a giant spread. We always give the courtesy to go tell them, hey, we're throwing a giant spread, like 200 decoys, six spinners, the whole deal. If you want to come hunt with us, by all means, come hunt with us. But we're just letting you know. Even though they're like 300-400 yards away, if they drive past us, we always flag them down or run over there and just let them know. Because when you're on the Mississippi River and you're hunting that heavy migration, 9 times out of 10, you got a giant spread out. That's what they're going to work. And it's not being cocky or overly confident. It's just how the ducks do it. Small spreads work. They do. But when you're sitting next to somebody and a flock of 250 comes down, they're not going to go sit with the little spread. 9 times out of 10, they're going to sit with that giant spread.
Right.
So it's an adventure. We've never had issues on the Mississippi River. Like, we've never run into that guy, if you know what I mean. But you do run into that guy in southeastern and the southern part of the state, just because everybody's so crammed in. There's only so many marshes. Whereas the Mississippi River, you could go out of one launch and drive 6 miles north and see four sets of hunters. It's so big. And then you could buy a tag for Iowa or Minnesota and hunt that side of the river too. And now you're double. It's because the channel just does this the whole way. So it's endless.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds really cool. This episode is also brought to you by the Duck Hole and Company, attracting feathers together. They are a full-service habitat company located in North Carolina. If you have questions about waterfowl habitat or need some work done on your property, contact them through any of their social media platforms at the Duck Hole and Company. They can also fix you up with golden millet, also known as the duck buffet, and the best bang for your duck. That's pretty good thinking of asking people to hunt with you. I think a lot more people are starting to see the value in that instead of competing against each other. And I try to do that myself. I think that goes a long way. It makes the experience better for everybody, I think.
Yeah. We had a couple last year, husband, wife, fiance, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. They seemed like husband and wife. They beat us to the launch, which does not happen, like, ever. We're never beat to the launch on the Mississippi River. But they beat us, and they left right as we pulled in. They pulled away from the launch, and we watched them, and we're like, no, they're going to the spot. They ended up sitting in the wrong spot, and we went over there and told them we were planning on sitting over here, and they're like, oh, yeah, go ahead. And it's like, they were a very nice couple. Super nice to us. And it was one of those, Chase was the one talking to him, and Chase is like, I tell you what, sit over there, sit right there. Don't sit there, sit right there. If you sit right there, you're going to get some shooting in, and then we'll go somewhere else. So we went somewhere else. So then we heard them shooting in the morning, and then they never shot again. So like, we were like, what's going on? Well, we went to leave. We drove past, the launch was dry. These people hunted for like 30 minutes and then left. And it's like, I wish we would have known your hunt for 30 minutes. Like, so, cause we got skunked that morning. It was like, we know where we would need to be for the birds. And these people were there, but then they left and we didn't know they left. So it's like, the kingpin spot of the area went unattended and all these ducks were flying over it all morning. And we're just sitting there at the launch like, oh my God, we just missed out on a great hunt. But to each their own. They were super nice to us. They were super nice. And it was like, they didn't want to sit together. but they wanted to sit separate, and they did beat us there. So it was one of those like,
yeah,
give them the spot. Just let them have it. We're not going to play this game because it's not fair. Chase could see how many decoys they had in their boat, and it was like, if we sit over there, it's just going to ruin their hunt.
Right, right.
So it's, I mean, it's a horse apiece. It's a racing game here. The Mississippi River, it's not so bad, but if you go to, there's like three areas where you will be sitting in a war zone. Doesn't matter what time you get there. Doesn't matter what time, because of the rice fields. People just go park in the rice. In the state of Wisconsin, if the vegetation is rooted to the bottom, you can sit in it as long as it covers 50% of your vessel. So you can just go park in the rice, throw anchors or stakeout poles out. You're illegal. Well, dudes will do that, and they'll just sit all over the place in it. We do not hunt there. No way. Yeah. I'm doing that. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So you said it's split into a north and south zone. Do they stagger that so you get a longer season?
So the north zone, they open the north zone. And mind you, the northerners hate it because everybody from the south goes up north for that. Because you've waited 10 months. You've 10 months to get to go shoot big ducks. 3 hours north, or however close you are to that line, you head north. So 1 week prior, the north zone opens, and then the next week, the south zone opens. And that stays open for, I believe, 2 weekends, 10 days worth. Then it shuts down for like 5 weekdays, and then it reopens again in the south for the rest of the season. So we all like to go up north. For me, like I said, it's just a way to get up north and have a good time. It's not about shooting ducks or nothing like that. We don't go. If we bump into a local, we leave. Like it's not their water. They don't own it. But like, you're literally going to where they're trying to enjoy their opener. They're not coming south. Northerners do not come south. Because once the south opens, I never go back up north. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
Whereas the northerners, they never come south because that's their lifestyle. They like that. They like being left alone. I cannot blame them. I would be the same way. So we go up there. Usually shoot some ducks, do some hiking, and then we go do some fishing and stuff like that. But the southern opener is where it's a kingpin for us. Like that's the big one, because that starts out your duck season. It's close to home. That's where we do all of our scouting. So the split is cool, but at the same time, for the sake of people who live up north, if you're watching this and you live in northern Wisconsin, I'm with you. I think the whole state should open at one time. Don't hate me. Love me. I'm on your side.
So what does your scouting look like? When do you kick that off?
We've already been doing it for a couple months. Educational standpoint here. Scouting isn't just for ducks. Scouting is for food. So we're already looking for sprouting, smartweed, millet, rice grass, duck food in general. If you're a big wood duck guy or mallard guy for that matter. And mallards do eat acorns. You look for oak trees. If you like to hunt the trees, see if they're having acorns this year, because that's going to dictate if they're going to hit that spot heavily or not, because they love waddling up in the woods and eating acorns. But we love checking on those food sources. But the huge one for us, huge in the southern part of Wisconsin, is DNR projects, because the DNR does all sorts of different projects that opens and closes pieces of marsh, but also they spray a ton of Phragmites. I don't know if you guys got Phragmites there or Phragmites. Oh, yeah. Yep. So we check on that. We check to see if they sprayed, because when they spray, that kills all the vegetation. It makes new holes. We watch on dams to see how much a dam is holding back water, because that will make a hole or break a hole. So usually once every 3-4 weeks, we drive around to all of our spots. We check all that stuff, and we're not looking for ducks. We do not care about ducks this time of year, because all these little hatchlings, they're all going to go north. As soon as they're big enough, 90% of them are going to fly north, because as soon as they're big enough, it's middle, late July, hot as all hell. They want to get out of here. So they leave. But then close to waterfowl scouting, the things that we look for around here, it's just duck numbers. We're just looking for the food and the duck numbers, seeing where they're concentrated. We'll sit early mornings or late afternoons and just watch where they're landing. But like Mississippi River, you're trying to find out what food they're hitting, when they're hitting it, and then where they're loafing. Because where they roost like 99% of the ducks will roost in the food. So in the afternoon, you don't want to shoot the food up. And on the Mississippi River, they come back like 9, 10 o'clock at night sometimes, because we'll sit until an hour after dark, never hear a duck, drive in the next morning, jump 10,000 ducks. And it's like, you had to come back in the middle of the night. So in the Mississippi River, the huge thing we look for between Chase and I is feathers. We'll drive into holes and then slow roll the shoreline, and we're just looking for feathers. And then if you're not looking for feathers, you're checking the rice. You're seeing if they're hitting the rice or not. Because if they're hitting the rice, you'll see that all the seed is gone or the stems are all broken. So that's how we scout the Mississippi River a lot. You know, and we hunt all up and down the Mississippi River, usually north of La Crosse. That's where we're at as far. I don't know if you know where that is, but like that's like the famous area of the Mississippi River. The biggest congregation of ducks on the Mississippi River falls between Ferryville all the way up to 30 minutes north of La Crosse. And Ferryville is like the notorious world-renowned canvasback hunting. And that's where the big Wisconsin canvasback and diver hunting happens out there. But scouting all that, really, we're just driving around trying to jump birds. And I mean, Chase and I 2 years ago so aggressively went scouting to hunt immediately at noon one day. We came around a corner and like 250 teal, couple mallards and a couple wood ducks got up, and Chase and I looked at each other and I was like right here, and I started launching decoys while he's driving through ducks jumping, throwing decoys. Chase, while moving, drops me off with my blind bag and loaded gun. I sit down, turn around, he's still driving away. I shoot, he parks 40 yards away. Before he kills the motor, I got two teal down. Chase gets up, he's like, what are you shooting at? And they're just blowing back into this hole because they have to be there. Yeah. And it's as fast as you can reload. We shot our remaining nine ducks because that morning we only shot three where we were. We shot our remaining nine ducks and then we looked at each other and we're just like, what even happened? Like, what was that? So like our scouting missions, you have to be prepared to hunt, because if you jump them in the middle of the day, 9 times out of 10, they're going to come right back. They're just going to go up circle and then they're going to come right back.
Sure. So,
and it's happened with mallards, gadwalls, you name it. Like if they feel safe in a spot and you jump them just with a boat, you didn't shoot at them, they're coming back. And they usually come back in waves, just like kind of like you guys. I'm sure if you jump them, a couple will come back, a couple will come back.
Right.
So like you can time out how you go get your bird, your dead birds, because you don't want to interfere with the next volley. So that's how we do our scouting. It is a lot of fun. I know you know Jordan from I forget his name on YouTube, Duck Gun Chronicles.
Yeah, Jordan.
So yeah, he got to experience a bunch of Mississippi River hunting this year. So he got to experience a bunch of like scouting and stuff. And him and Chase were calling each other nonstop, like, check this out. What do you think of this? What do you think of that? Here's what we saw. Here's what we saw. And it's like, oh my God. Like it's just seeing people's eyes light up when they get to experience the Mississippi River flyway is crazy, because like you could see 100,000 ducks like in a day of just sitting there looking at the sky. And it's like what you see in the TV shows just day. It's just crazy. So scouting there is like every day is different, but you have to be ready to go like immediately.
Yeah. This episode is also brought to you by Rigam Wright Waterfowl, producers of the most well-designed and well-built products, tried and tested by the most heavily seasoned hunters on the planet. Their mission has always been and will always be to design, build, and supply the most innovative and high-performance hunting products available at a reasonable price. They will not succumb to outside pressure to cheapen their products, and will continue to take bold steps and huge risks to separate themselves from their competition. They dominate in customer service, knowing that their end-use customers are the very backbone of their existence. Above all else, they operate with honesty and integrity and treat people fairly, never compromising these principles in pursuit of profit. Check them out at rigamright.com or your favorite local outdoor retailer.
So are you finding that a lot of these birds are calendar migrators, or are they more weather dependent?
So calendar migrators, that does exist, but things that can stop them is heavy wind events here. So like Wisconsin, If you're within an hour of the Mississippi River, you're in the Mississippi River Flyway, in my opinion. Outside of that, you're in the Mississippi River Wind Flyway. What you need, if you're east of it, is a northwest or a west wind to blow that flight off the Mississippi River, because those ducks do not want to come off of it. Mm-hmm. But if they're so high and it's early morning, afternoon, and dark, what you'll notice is if you get a high northwest or a west wind overnight, those birds that were flying at night, say with a full moon, southeastern Wisconsin will be loaded with ducks the next morning. And I mean tornadoes, because those ducks don't really know the difference. They're just migrating at night. The wind is slowly but surely pushing them and pulling them off path.
Yeah.
So then as soon as you get an east wind again, all those ducks are gone. But like the Mississippi River, it's kind of crazy. So like you're focusing solely on wind patterns. That's what we focus on. Now, one of the huge things with like calendar birds, they will show up. And last year we predicted it at the end of October. We were like, based off the wind patterns that we're seeing, there should be a stupid amount of ducks in this spot. And we had never hunted it. But I told Chase, I was going out the day before. I was like, I'm hunting over here. They have to be here. Like they can't not be here. They have to be here. The wind is what's going to bring them here, because this insane north and west wind combined, it was like north met by a hard west. We watch apps that show you exactly where the wind channels are.
Okay.
And where they come from was matched by a south wind. So that next morning, a south wind hit hard and stopped those birds in their tracks, 0 mile per hour. So we predicted where they would want to be. And the next morning, it was just raining ducks. It was just as fast as you could reset up. Like I'm sending my dog on birds and birds are like committed to the decoys. And it's like, oh my God, hurry up and get back, you know? So like calendar birds, they are a real thing, but you have to match the calendar to the wind pattern, because certain things happen with wind patterns that will enhance it, speed it up, or slow it down. And in that case, it stopped the whole migration in its tracks. We shot 3 three-man limits in 3 days, but you know, before like 10 o'clock in the morning. And that was being picky. Had we just shot everything, which was, you know, just a stupid amount of teal coming through, eventually you're like, let's get some bigger ducks. Like we all just drove accumulatively 15 hours between the three vehicles. Like, well, let's get some bigger ducks here.
Yeah. So flesh that out a little bit. I want to hear some more details about, so you're saying when you get a south wind with that, it kind of stalls the migration right in that area?
So wherever you're at and wherever the ducks are migrating, a south wind will stop it dead in its tracks. So what they'll do is they'll come down to feed. So our favorite time to hunt the Mississippi River is slowly become a south wind, whereas most guys, they only want to hunt the north, northwest, because that's bringing the new birds.
Sure.
The problem is, as you may know, and a lot of people watching this will know, a mallard will migrate over the United States, never land, and go straight down to South America, the Gulf, the south coast of the United States in one flight. You know, running at 100, 120 miles an hour in the dark on a full moon. Let that sink in. Those ducks are going over billions of people that are never going to give a hunter the time of day, you know, the 1% of us, a time of day on our spread. And they're gone. So like paying attention, if you get a heavy north northwest wind, the birds do want to come down to feed. But as you see with a lot of these GPS tracked ducks, they just keep going. They do not stop. And our favorite wind is to hunt on an upcoming south, or a just happened right now this morning of the hunt, a south has started, because the ducks will come down and they'll hang around those areas more. Now, you usually get the first day of that as a really good hunt, because after that, once they come down, they've never been there before. Like a lot of these ducks are this year's offspring, babies, brood, whatever you want to call them. Sure. A lot of those ducks are from this year. They don't know the area. So once they come down, they find an area, and then they spread out. And that's when you get ducks that find the refuge. They find the river channels and they find the places where hunters aren't pretty quickly. Yeah. So you can't just beat up one spot on a heavy south wind, because the ducks that are in that area that didn't get killed by you shooting in the decoys, they are not coming back to the decoys. So,
right.
And I mean, even teal, you'll see it. Teal will just come in and circle, 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 but they'll stay off to the side. And it's like they had to have been shot in this area already. So like hunting the winds is the best for Wisconsin. An east wind is a nightmare. An east, a northeast, southeast, East is a nightmare because what it's doing is pushing birds back away from Lake Michigan. And we don't get a Lake Michigan flight from over the lake. They will come down and run the shoreline down, or they go around it and run the Michigan shoreline down. They do not, if you look at GPS tracking, what does all these ducks do? They usually fly around the edges of the Great Lakes. Yeah. They're hugging the shoreline. So like on a heavy east wind, I live in southeastern Wisconsin. I'm 25 minutes from Lake Michigan. If we get an east wind, pretty much moves all the ducks out. So you're heavy on a west or a northwest or a southwest. That's when you're going to have your best hunts. And that just goes with numbers, watching GPS tracking, watching wind flows, stuff like that. Here's the thing. I get it. A lot of guys have very busy schedules. They have a lot of kids. They're too committed to marriage timelines with like family things, family events. They don't have the time to sit there and watch wind flows and say, I'm hunting this day, but not this day. They're hunting the day that they can hunt. So it's not for everybody. It's a lot of work. It's a ton of texting, a ton of phone calls, a ton of driving around. If you see what is that called? The Hunting Public, those guys.
Mm-hmm.
That's like Chase and I, or me and my buddy Roman, me and my buddy Jim. It's nonstop phone calls, nonstop text messages. You check this, I check that. It is nonstop. So it's a crazy experience, but watching wind flows, moon patterns, calendar birds, we put it all together. We all team up and we make a lot of hunts happen because of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where are you getting your GPS tracking info from, if you don't mind sharing that?
You mean like Onyx and stuff like that?
For the, you were talking about how you can see the ducks will follow the edges of the Great Lakes.
There's apps like Windy. You mean like GPS track ducks. Cohen Wildlife Labs.
Okay.
You probably heard of them.
I've seen that one. Yep.
Yep. 50 Ducks tracks some as well. And then there's another one. I can't think of the name right now. I've posted about it before, but I post this stuff all year for people to be able to watch these ducks because you can really watch patterns of ducks. But like Cohen and 50 Ducks are my two favorite ones. Yeah. And because like Cohen puts flights in the sky to like check on these birds as they migrate, and they report where the biggest concentrations of birds are. So
that's
like,
interesting.
Yeah, watching Cohen, like after our season's closed, they'll be pointing like showing where in Illinois and Missouri these ducks are. And if you pay close attention, you'll notice like a big thing with like Cohen and 50 Ducks, you'll notice a trend of ducks just aren't going south like they used to. They're taking a lot longer of a period of time to go south because of the warming trend that we may or may not be in. We're not going to get into that because I'm not going to argue with that, but the warming trend that we may or may not be in, ice. So ice is a big one up here, like Wisconsin. Once we see snow and ice, they start to push further and further down, like pretty quickly. Yeah. So it's watching those GPS track ducks can teach you a ton. And watching Cohen, because they post flights, videos, pictures of where the big concentration of mallards, gadwalls, pintails, widgeon, wood ducks, they post that stuff. So like watching those people talk about that, there is no arguing. That is what's happening. Here's a picture, here's a video,
right,
here's a time stamp. So that's huge to us.
Yeah, for sure.
This episode is also brought to you by Flight Day Ammunition. Flight Day Ammo was born in the heart of the Mississippi Flyway in west central Missouri. Founder Ben Myers and his family have duck hunted this region of the country for over 50 years. Ben's passion for quality ammunition led to the development of his own brand. Flight Day utilizes the best components in the ammo industry, which provides unmatched quality, patterns, and lethality. Check them out at flightdayammo.com. And be sure to use discount code MW10 at checkout to save 10%.
Are there any other weather patterns that you're paying attention to along with the wind?
Snow. So, okay. As you may know, birds in Canada, cold doesn't matter. Freezing a lake and freezing marshes doesn't matter because they still have rivers. It's about food coverage. It comes down to food coverage. And as soon as their food's covered, or we like to say, as soon as a mallard gets snow on its feet, as soon as the snow can cover its foot, they're done. And that's when they start to push. And if you watch big snow events, that's when you want to just be anywhere, because the birds are going to start pushing. And you can watch Cohen, you can watch 50 ducks, you can watch all these other ones, you can watch Doppler radars. They'll report giant migration, like the giant migrations coming over the border from the north. So that's when, like, North Dakota just gets stupid. Nebraska gets stupid. The Mississippi River can get stupid, but when a duck starts to get snow pressure and their food's covered, they start to get the hell out of Dodge. And that's when they usually start pushing heavy to, like, Illinois and Missouri, based off of what Cohen shows. That first big snow event, Illinois and Missouri, that whole stretch right there, really starts to show monster pushes of birds. So the snow is the big one. Rain doesn't matter. As you know, a duck doesn't care. They'll feed, sleep, piss shit, hang out, flock up, break apart. Like, they don't care.
Right. So all this public land that you have to run around on in Wisconsin, is it kind of wide open, or is there any spots that you have to get into any type of drawing or anything?
So no, we don't have drawing. The only, I guess, drawing you would say, there are hunt clubs, is disability blinds. It's not really a draw. You just got to get there first. I feel bad for people who have disabilities, just because it is very limited. I wish I had the capabilities to help them out, but there is no real drawing for veterans, kids, people with disabilities, normal hunters. None of that. There's no WMA. There's no, you can't leave the launch until this time, for the most part. The DNR really doesn't care about that. It's if you're safe or not. Yeah. It's just all public, which plays huge in our favor. And that's why a ton of people come here. We probably have one of the biggest drawings of public land hunters coming to this state, because you just get your tag. As long as it's green on Onyx maps, 99.9% of the time, you can go hunt it whenever you want. So, the only thing that's, like, kind of controlled like that would be the guides on the Mississippi River. There's only so many guides per pool. And that's just because that's just the DNR's rule to not overpressure guides, on federal waterways. And, but otherwise it's completely free. You can go wherever you want, whenever you want. There's no rules or regulations on that.
Yeah, that's huge. That's how Pennsylvania is too. There's a couple of, managed areas that the state, put some special regulations on, and they'll put some blinds in, and you can go up for the day and put in for the drawing or at the beginning of the season. But I'd say 90% of it is kind of exactly like what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And the reason I asked that is because there's been a lot of discussion about restrictions because of pressure in a lot of states out west now. And I was just curious how Wisconsin was handling that.
I think it was Oklahoma or Arkansas just did something big where they're going to raise the fees or something like that, or you can't hunt unless it's like Monday to Thursday or something. Yeah. I don't know how you can enforce that on federal waterways, but if it's state-owned and 100% of the access is state-owned, that's how they could control it, is the access to that water. The water is federal. That's federal waterway, federal duck stamp, federal way to access. Sure. But they can control what people don't know, that launch.
Yeah.
They can tell you, you ain't using that launch without these permissions. And, you know, just like how some launches have cash, some have a QR code you got to scan, they can control how you access it. So it's a big wake-up call. And I don't want to say I agree with these states. I don't want to say I disagree. But when you got states that have very little water access, that aren't based off of a river, like some of these southern states, closer over by Nebraska and Oklahoma, and everybody's hitting one area, I can kind of see how bureaucrats, politicians are getting involved and saying, we need to defend our people more than the out-of-towners. I don't think limiting them is the right answer. Maybe raise your out-of-state resident license, your non-resident licenses. I mean, I guess that'd be the best case scenario, but at the same time, it's like, just like with Northern Wisconsin, I feel their pain, even though I'm 100% legally going and hunting there and I'm never going to come back again. They waited all year to hunt their area, and now the whole southern half that can't hunt comes up there. I feel their pain. I always try to go where there's no truck, or I try to get to where I'm going to go first, just so I don't interfere, because in reality, I'm never going there again, and I'm ruining their opener by coming from the south there when they're not going to do the same thing to me.
Sure.
So it's, I see it's a shit show brewing, because I could see other states starting to be like, oh yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. Thankfully, I live in Wisconsin. In my opinion, it's one of the best duck hunting states, simply because we have so much Mississippi River access and so much public land with marshes. Thanks to Ducks Unlimited has been doing giant projects here, just absolute giant, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of projects here. So that's been super cool to see. It's going to be interesting in the next 10 years, because as you know, duck hunting's dying. Nationwide, duck hunting's dying. It just is. But the DNR is, you know, slowly considering ideas and methods and ways to get people more engaged with the sport. So kind of like with crossbows, bow hunting slowly dying. Uh-huh. Okay, we'll let everybody use crossbows. I don't believe everybody should be able to use a crossbow, but when it comes to the sport, when the sport not dying, I think everybody should be able to use crossbows. So if they got to make maneuvers to get the youth to want to do it, fine. But I could see these access things that you just mentioned with like Oklahoma and Arkansas and that, where they're starting to talk about who and when could access public lands from out of state. I could see other states starting to look at that, because they want their residents to really be able to focus on, having access to the things that they pay taxes on or they maintain, which would be their launches. I could see the feds getting involved. Quote me, the feds getting involved, because you're controlling access to a federal waterway. So
yeah, I bring that up all the time for argument's sake. You go out west, just say like to Nebraska, there's a lot of federal properties that are managed for waterfowl that you can hunt on. And it's like, that's my tax money paying mm-hmm. for those. How are you going to tell me to stay out of there?
Yeah.
And I think there's definitely an argument on that standpoint.
Yeah. And it's, I feel as though once the feds get involved on that, they're going to win, as they rightfully, righteously and rightfully should be able to win that case for waterfowlers, right, no matter what state you're from. But I kind of see what the states are doing, and I'm not saying I agree with it, but doing with, okay, fine. Yeah. Go ahead. Try to access it then, without using our launch. That's how we're going to use it against you. And that's just one little way that they're, and what they're doing is they're kind of curving around the legal way to do it. It's still legal what they're doing, but the feds are going to be like, you can't do that to your access points or your license fees. Like you, it's federal. Everybody should be able to use it. So it's going to be a 50-50 war, and the feds will come out on top if they battle it. Simply because it's tax dollars. Even though I'm from Wisconsin, I have every right to go down there, buy my license, and hunt that water.
Sure.
I'm not going to, but I mean, it's your right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all for giving the residents a much better advantage, for sure. I mean, I think that should be everywhere. My only issue is, you know, talking to serious guys like you and a lot of my friends around the country, it seems like the hardcore guys are working harder at getting away from the pressure instead of complaining to the DNR about it. And that seems to be where a lot of this is getting traction, is these people. And I don't want to paint anybody with a broad brush, but there's a lot of guys that are like, well, you know, I hunted this same marsh for the last 50 years and there's no ducks here anymore. It's like, okay, well, go somewhere else. Don't blame the non-residents.
Yeah. I've never in my life, you'll never see me put, we have lakes here like Delavan Lake, Lake Geneva. 7 out of 10 cars there are not from Wisconsin, because it's within 30, 45 minutes of Illinois. 7 out of the 10 cars aren't from Wisconsin. And I don't complain when I see somebody from out of state, because A, they paid more than me. B, they came here to spend money at my bait shops, my gas stations, my grocery stores. They're fueling the economy more than I am, because they're spending way more because you got to drive here. So you get that, like we call them fibs, Illinois, FIB, F in Illinois bastards. We call them fibs. I mean, we call them that and everything, but like, I've never had a confrontation with anybody from another state, because you're paying to be here. You're fueling my economy. So, but it's like, when it comes to like the marshes and stuff, like you talk to freelance, I'm sure you are in talks with High Prairie Sportsman, Outdoor Limits, all these guys.
Yeah.
Chase, my buddy Chase owns somewhere in Wisconsin. And so like we, all of us, cumulatively, even though we're in separate states doing our separate thing, we work hard. Now, each one of my ducks is very expensive because of gas money and the truck and gas pay and the boat. But when it comes down to it, when people say, oh, you shot a hen. I didn't shoot for a hen for 10 months, though, did I? I didn't shoot a hen for 10 months. It comes down to it where, you know, every duck is super expensive, but I only get to do what I love arguably the most for 2 months. So if the gas money and all that stuff means I got to work harder to find the ducks harder to not be part of the general population sitting in the middle of a freaking war zone, then fine. That's what it comes down to. And thank God in Wisconsin, there are no talks whatsoever of doing WMAs and doing drawings. And you see that stuff down in like Kansas and Arkansas where there's 80 boats sitting outside of a gate floating and they yeah. all freaking smash on their 40 horse Yamahas. And next thing you know, you got, looks like the side of your boat was hit by a roadside bomb in Iraq from all the banging on each other. Jesus, we don't have that problem. And there's like no talks of that. So it's a free man's world to go do whatever you want. Each launch sign will have like rules. You can't camp. You can camp. You can camp if you're on this part of the property, but not this part. So each one has simple to follow rules. I hope in the future that never happens, but Wisconsin, if people would just call their biologists, stuff that's not made public, that's already been made a decision on, they can tell you things that have been made decisions on, but they're not making it public because they don't want it to be abused too fast. They want a slow transition into new rules and regulations and things that you can and can't do. So if you just, people just started contacting biologists and stuff, they will learn about stuff like what you're talking about. It's so easy. Emails, I email, text, and call with my local biologists in all the counties that we hunt. And like there's marsh managers, riverway managers, all this stuff. So like we talk with them. So all the things that you're talking about, you get your answers real quick. If you just stop posting on social media and go to the source, you can get your answer on who, what, when, where, why, how with all those issues that we were talking about.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I'm excited to announce that AV's Hunting is now the official hunting clothing and camo of Migration Waterfowl. The unmatched quality of their high-performance fabrics and direct-to-consumer sales model delivers high-end gear at wholesale pricing. Their unique camouflage pattern was built from the sky down, mimicking the natural camouflage of a hen mallard. Check out their innovative line of technical waterfowl clothing and their revolutionary refuge camo at avshunting.com. That's avshunting.com. Advanced waterfowl gear designed for every condition. Well, I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about Hard Water Freaks and the stuff that you're doing with veterans and the youth. I think that's super important.
So, huge part of my heart, I'm a veteran myself. There you go. So a big part of my life is like my history as a veteran. Yeah. That's like a huge part of my life. I served 8 years in the Marine Corps. Went to 15 total countries, have a huge heart for veterans. And I started this platform as like my friends and I just being funny, like, let's start a Facebook group. Tons of stuff went viral. It blew up. Started making a bunch of money off it. We make a ton of money off of it now, but I spend a ton of the money, on kids fishing trips, kids who had their house burned down, car stolen, cars broken into, you name it. We will fully refurnish that kid. All we need is a police report with the police so that we can prove that it's a real situation that happened. And we will give you a new tackle box and a couple of fishing rods on our dime from money that we raised or just from the website purchases. Kids fishing trips, veterans fishing trips, veteran just nonprofit donations. This past year, we held our big event. We had like 157 people show up. We had over, I think, 50 sponsors this year, over 100 raffle items. We raised $10,000 for nonprofits to help veterans, I guess you would say, recover from PTSD, manage their PTSD by giving yourself a way to cope and get away from what's going on mentally so that you have a way to help yourself with the curing and healing process, which for us, it's fishing trips. We love getting a couple of trips every year to veterans to go fishing. Last year we did duck hunting. We bought a duck hunting trip. I'm going to do another one this year for Lake Michigan. And it's just a way to give back. Instead of take as a company, just make money and just keep spending it or just keep making it. I want it to be a community-based LLC. So we spend a ton of what we make back. And that's like what my following is pretty much a mass amount of, is people who care about kids, that care about veterans, and painting a brighter future. And on the duck hunting side of it, I don't have an LLC that's duck hunting based, but I do. I am launching duck hunting apparel now. We have like duck hunting decals and stuff that we sell. I'll never get big into the industry with product, just because I'm already big into the industry with fishing stuff. And yeah, that's 365. So like, I got to like pick and choose, but it's, I have a network of a lot of very good people and a lot of amazing companies that I work with that can really just change people's lives. So that's my huge thing. In the meantime, I fish and I duck hunt a ton. It kind of interferes a little bit, but there's a lot of late nights. There's a lot of sitting on the laptop at Airbnbs, like trying to make sure stuff at the website and trips, people are on trips here, people are on trips there. Right now we're working with a mom. I'm waiting to hear back from her. Car was broken into, I believe it was, and the whole tackle box of our kid was stolen. So we're going to replace the whole thing, free of charge. Just need a police report, just so we know it's a real thing, just because there are those people in the world.
Unfortunately.
Yes. We've already encountered some of that, but yeah, no harm, no foul. That's why we just say, you know, as long as it's a real thing, police report. One guy's house burnt down. One guy's garage burnt down, Matt Markison. Hey, buddy, if you're watching this, I was like, did it really burn down? He sent me a picture. It was burned down.
Wow.
But we helped out with some fishing tackle for him. And another kid, his parents, I believe it was the RV burnt down on a trip or something, or outside the house. They lost everything. I contacted the police department, confirmed, hey, this happened. We surprised him with $750 in tackle. So it's that's where my heart's at.
That's wonderful.
It's the right thing to do as a veteran myself, and somebody who really, I don't have kids, I never will, but who loves seeing youth succeed. This sport dies if the youth doesn't succeed. That's the way I see it. So if they're not going to succeed, amen, the future of hunting and fishing is gone, and people need to wake up and realize that. And that's a huge thing that I push all the time.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your service to our country and your service to the hunting and fishing community. That's amazing work you're doing there.
Yeah, it's thank you. I mean, thank you for that. I saw my service as a job. I lost friends, you see things that you're not proud of, or you're proud of, and you do some things that you never get to do again. I miss it every day. My back doesn't, but it's one of those things where to me it was just a job, but it was like a prideful job. And
absolutely,
it's awesome to have the support of the community who loves veterans, especially veterans in the outdoors. I would not be where I am today if it wasn't for my love for veterans and kids. I openly know that. I admit it, and I love it because I'm never going to stop doing the right thing, in my personal opinion, for those people. So if you like helping veterans and kids, all you got to do is support the website at hardwaterfreaks.com. Go to our social media. Everything that is shared, liked, and commented on slowly but surely creeps us up. And the more following we get, the more customers we get, the more event attendees that we get. I hate to say this, it really does come down to money, because you can't do anything.
Unfortunately.
You can't do anything without money. So if you want to support an LLC that almost always does the right thing, because I do need to make a little bit of money to pay taxes, people. But I take a lot of our profit, and we do the right thing with it. We post about it all over the place. We'll post the checks just so people can see how real we are about it. Since 2015, we're over $100,000 donated back to kids and veterans via
trips,
gear, nonprofit checks, you name it. So if you like supporting things like that, hardwaterfreaks.com, or contact me on social media. It's literally what we do.
Awesome. I got to ask you, because I ask everybody, what do you have, like a favorite hunting story or like a crazy thing that happened while you were hunting or fishing?
I do. And Chase is going to love me for this. So it happened last year. My favorite one of all time. Last year, Chase and I took a duck boat. where a duck boat shouldn't be taken. We found that out. But we ran into this spot at night, and we've never been in there. So Chase and I, we've never taken a boat in there. So we took the boat in there, came off plane, and it was like, hey, let's push pull. We started push pulling. And it was like 800 yards to get to where we wanted to go. We push pulled for like 20 minutes. And in the dark, we did this, hooked off to the right. And we didn't know it, but my old lady's like, we got to go that way. And she's on the bow, like using another push pole to like keep the boat angled. Well, she didn't know it because it's pitch black out. There's no moon. We don't know. Well, we twisted. So then we recorrected. Well, that took us across a mud flat. Well, we were stubborn and kept pushing through this mud flat. And it became an absolute nightmare, heart attack. Like, I'm not kidding. We were literally on the verge of dying. Like, I've never sweat that much. I've never pushed myself that hard. I have back issues. I have radiculopathy, neuropathy, like nerve issues throughout from my back issue throughout my body.
Okay.
And I push myself too hard, way too hard as best I could. Chase pushed himself so hard. We eventually were laying on my hunt deck like this, both kicking our feet to see if that would just make the boat glide across the mud. It didn't. Eventually, we got in the boat, dripping sweat. Mind you, it's like 35 degrees outside, and we're just pouring sweat.
Yeah.
And Chase looks at me. He's like, because I got a Pro Drive motor, and he's like, just bury it in the mud. He's like, just bury it and open it up. We'll, my old lady and him would just push pull off the side, and we like turned around slowly and just slowly made our way out, and we left. Went to a completely different launch. Didn't get there until 30 minutes into shooting. And shot the fastest limit that we ever shot in our life, thinking that we just ruined the whole day. But we talk about that still, and it's like, I don't ever want to hunt anywhere near this place ever again unless the Mississippi River is at stage 10 flood class A. Mm-hmm. It's like, it was,
that's crazy.
I've never in my life thought I was going to die like that. It was sitting there with Chase. We honestly looked at each other like, what the man? Like, what is even happening right now?
It's crazy how that works. A lot of times when you get into situations like that, you get rewarded with a limit of ducks after something crazy or a lot of hard work.
To this day, we talk and he's like, why didn't we just turn around when the push pulling didn't work? And he's like, why didn't we just stop? And he's like, instead, we're like, let's push a 1,000-pound boat further into this shit. And it just kept getting worse. And eventually it got to the point where you couldn't feel your legs, you know? And it was like,
yeah,
I'm done. And then, so it's, I guess that'd be like one of my top two, nightmare stories of duck hunting.
That's great. Well, Max, I've taken up an hour of your time. I really appreciate you making the time today.
Anytime.
You mentioned going to the Hard Water Freaks website. You're on Instagram, anywhere else you want to plug?
I'm on everything. Only one I don't take too seriously is YouTube when it comes like duck hunting and stuff, just because I don't have the time to do the video editing. A lot of our duck hunts, if little plug here for Chase, somewhere in Wisconsin's YouTube. If you go over there, you can see pretty much every hunt I've ever been on with Chase, which is probably like 20 hunts a year, 15 hunts a year with Chase. You can go over there, see my dog's first season last year. Otherwise, for supporting me, it'd be TikTok, Instagram, Facebook page, and group. Otherwise, the website, hardwaterfreaks.com.
All right, Max, I appreciate it. Just hang tight after we stop this, and appreciate your time.
Oh, yeah, anytime.
Big thanks again to Max for taking time out of his day to join me on the show. And thank you all for tuning into this episode. I really appreciate it. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at Migration Waterfowl. We also have a Facebook group for the podcast. Please join us there as well. And if you could, please do me a favor and subscribe to the YouTube channel while you are there. Lots of great content coming that way throughout the rest of the year. You can find the link to our merchandise store in the show notes below or on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Check out our shirts, hoodies, thermoses, coffee, and more over there. And now, through the end of July, 10% of everything we sell will go to Ducks Unlimited. Thank you to everyone who's been purchasing merchandise and supporting the show. If you like what you've heard here, please take a moment and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Send me a message or email after you leave the review and I will mail you a podcast decal.
And get out there and enjoy the outdoors, but make sure you seek out a relationship with the one who created everything. Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14 says, "Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it." And remember, the migration is coming. Be ready when it arrives. Tune in next week to hear another great guest on the Migration Waterfowl Podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.